This episode is brought to you by DistroKid.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Hey everyone, today's guest is Mikey Erg, drummer for the South Amboy, New Jersey punk rock band, The Ergs. Together we break down the writing, recording, and inspiration behind the fan favorite song, Pray for Rain, taken off their 2004 debut album, Dork Rock Cork Rod. Mikey was gracious enough to share the demo of this song, a voice recording of just him singing and playing guitar. And the demo is almost identical to what was actually laid down to tape. Producer and recording engineer Chris Pierce was a fourth set of ears in the studio, but didn't go much beyond that role in the producer's chair, choosing to let the band be themselves. This sounds like The Ergs, no one else. They let those happy accidents and slight imperfections be one with the recording, choosing not to line up and tune everything perfectly. The band recorded live in the studio, save for the guitar solos and vocals. The original recording still sounds great to these ears, but wait until you hear the new remix version by Steve Albini. It absolutely rules. So for all this, and pissing off punk crowds by playing thrash metal covers your whole set, stick around. This is a good one.
Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast. Hey, hey, have you heard? Krista makes a podcast.
Mikey Erg, how you doing?
Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I was thinking about this intro. I think I'm going to call you Mikey Erg. I'm not going to, you know, use your real last
that's
name.
That's my stage name, man.
Yeah, nobody knows you by that. So,
Which was funny about, like, when I started making solo records, I was like, do I do it under my own name? Do I do it under Mikey Erg? And I did it under Mikey Erg. And I'm not sure, still to this day, not sure if it was a good thing or a bad thing in terms of... Did I want to make myself like a different entity, or did I want to like use the name that people knew me by? I don't know. Who knows what the good way to go about it was.
I still say that D.D. King's rap career would have been huge if he was D.D. Ramon, but
that's, you know, true.
I'm in the minority there. But I gotta say, I know that you know this because I told you, but one of the Ergs' last tours that you did on your initial run was with Less Than Jake.
That's right.
And I remember, you know, this song in particular was just always a standout, a fan favorite. And, you know, I just saw the momentum of this band. And then the next thing I know, you're telling me that you guys are breaking up. I said, what? And, you know, we don't get into those things on this show, but to say I was disappointed, and then to find out that you came back and you've done subsequent, you know, reunion shows and whatnot, just released some new music last year. It's awesome. That's music to these ears. But I loved the band. I love the band because, especially you, I know that you hear nuances, and you've heard me talk about it on this show, of lining everything up in Pro Tools and fixing all the vocals. And that's what the allure for punk rock was to me in the early days. It was a level playing field. You know, I couldn't play fancy guitar solos and all this stuff, but I knew three chords.
Right.
And, you know, I tried to develop them and work them as best as I could. But you guys had this just reckless abandon kind of sound to your band. It was grodgy, it was punky, but it had like this 50s Buddy Holly innocence to it too, with the lyrics and the delivery. So take us back on this song, Pray for Rain. Do you remember writing it? Because you sent me the demo.
Yeah, I do remember writing it. This song and A Very Pretty Song for a Very Special Young Lady Part 2 and Everything Falls Apart and More, all on Dork Rock Cork Rod. They were all kind of from the same like week, basically, and the same semi I hesitate to call it a relationship because it lasted for about 2 days. But basically, this is like the song I wrote just getting into this thing, and then the other two are the breakup songs from that relationship. It was right in the beginning of the Ergs, kind of like within the first couple years. And back then, we were even more so than we were towards the end. We were all over the place. We would like open sets with like a Dinosaur Jr. cover, and then do a John Coltrane cover, and then do 15 thrash songs, and then do a couple pop punk songs, you know, like. And in fact, when I wrote this song and a couple of the other ones, Jeff kind of refused to do them for a while because they were like too in the poppy direction. And then eventually we started working on the album, because these were written probably like about a year or so before the album was even a thing that we wanted to do. So when we started working on the album, I was like, can we just do these songs?
Right.
And eventually we put our own Ergsy spin on them.
Well, it's interesting. The demo is almost identical to form. I mean, you know, barring a one word here or there, it was pretty identical to what it ended up being. Give it to me. Just can't wait for the day when inevitably you say I'm not the guy you thought you knew. And we have to talk, and you'll regrettably inform me that you're taking a walk. So in love with you, but I just don't know what to do. And then, of course, and we're going to get into this in a bit, you sent me, and I thought it wasn't out yet, but I found it on YouTube, the Steve Albini mix of the mm-hmm. song, which sounds really awesome, man. Yeah. I think he did a great job on it.
Yeah, we purposely didn't try to change it. In fact, but we also didn't reference the original mix either. So it was kind of just like a happy coincidence that we didn't really change all that much. We kind of just beefed it up a bit. My main concern with doing the remix was, you know, when we did this record, we did the record to tape, but yes. We mixed it to, like, at that point, it was DAT. And I honestly think we mixed this to a CDR. And then sent the CDR to the mastering guy.
Yeah.
You know, because that's just the way, you know, that's what we had back
then. Yeah, it's the way it was.
And I remember actively being like, I want to mix it to tape. And then it was like, well, no one even works from tape. And, you know, like, I don't even know if mastering engineers had the capability of like taking stuff from tape at that moment, or at least they had mastering engineers that we were going to be using.
Right.
We mix it to CDR, and basically I just wanted to, this was a good opportunity to get it into like at least high resolution audio, but we did mix it to tape.
Right. Well, and Albini's the right guy because, as you know, he doesn't like to mess with the band's sound.
Yeah. In fact, he said, for your fans, you don't want to change this too much. You just want to, you know, we basically just kind of tweaked it a little bit.
Yeah. I think you cleaned it up a little bit. Like you said, it sounds a little beefier, but it doesn't lose the essence of what the original track was. At least for me, it doesn't. I just think it sounds fantastic. But, you know, certainly by 2004, when you did this record, Mikey, there were Pro Tools studios everywhere. Probably more expensive than they are now, but certainly you probably could have found a spot. Were you trying to keep it pure going to tape at that point?
Yeah, we absolutely. It was by choice that we picked Chris Pierce, who we worked on the album with, and actually did almost 90% of our stuff was done with him. Because we wanted to do it to tape. We wanted, because we assumed it sounded better or more pure or whatever. And we were always the kind of band that we didn't like fix. We'd do punch-ins here and there if we fucked up a word or something, but like,
yeah,
we wanted it to sound like us playing, you know. We didn't want to quantize or any of that.
Yeah
we did both of our records to tape. It was only recently or only in the last like maybe a couple singles and the last kind of stuff that we actively started not using tape. In fact, we were going to use for the second record, we had this plan to go out to Seattle, do this record at Egg Studios, and that kind of fell through for a second. So we were like, oh, maybe we'll go to Stefan Edgerton and do it with him. That'd be cool. Yeah. But he didn't do tape, and we wanted to do tape. Like we never wanted to use a computer to record. So that was definitely a choice.
Well, and I gotta say, for everyone listening right now, I can't think of a harder working guy in punk rock. I mean, you're the true definition, I've said it a million times in the show, of a lifer. You've been on the road for the past 25 years of your life. You play drums, you play guitar, you play vocals. I'm sure you dabble in other instruments. You played for Star Fucking Hipsters. You played in the Dopamines, Dirt Bike, Annie, Houseboat, Parasites, the house band on the Chris Gethard show. I could go on. You filled in for other bands. I'd see you on the Warped Tour. What are you doing here? Like, oh, I'm filling in today for, I'm like, yeah. What? You're like the ultimate utility player on the baseball team. It's like, hey, yeah, go play first base. Hey, go catch.
I've gotten those calls. Or, hey, can you make it today? To can you fly to Belgium tonight and play a show?
No, and it's cool, and I respect that. For me, I always put my eggs in one band, in one basket. I couldn't imagine being pulled that many directions. Some people can. You're one of those people.
Yeah, it's tough. I just started a break of like, I'm going to take a couple months and just chill for, because I've been kind of nonstop for the first half of the year. So,
yeah. And we get that way, don't we? Especially when you live on the road and you've been in that album tour cycle, that a lot of us have, over the years. It's hard to take a step back and settle down sometimes, but I'm glad to hear you're trying.
Yeah. Trying. We'll see.
But you know, what do you think it was? Before we hop into this thing, you know, you guys released a lot of songs. You've released a lot of songs solo. What is it about this track? I mean, it's just, you go look on Spotify, it has the most plays. It's the one tune that your fans gravitated towards. And I hear all kinds of influences within this song. I hear Descendants. I hear Scott All. Yep. His, you know,
oh, absolutely.
In this track, I hear Mr. T Experience. I hear a little bit of Weezer. I hear, insert garage band from the 60s in there. It has all these.
Probably some Elvis Costello in there.
Yeah, it has all those influences. What is it about this track? You guys have a bunch of great songs, and I always wonder why certain songs resonate.
I have no idea, but I know also that's one of my favorite parts about listening to this show is, you know, people say it 9 times out of 10, the best songs that a band has are the ones that just kind of fell out of you, that didn't take any time to write. And that's, I mean, this song was written in 2.5 minutes. Like that so demo. That,
yeah.
I can't remember precisely if that demo was just me freeform or if I had written the lyrics down really quickly and put it down on tape, but it was essentially the way I wrote it was the way it's played now.
I almost thought that what you sent me was an isolated vocal and guitar track of the track at first, because it sounded identical to it, the demo.
Yeah, if you listen to it, you can tell it's probably about 3 a.m. you know, I'm much younger and groggier sounding. So I used to live in a recording studio that my dad owned, and I lived in the house above it. And you'll like this factoid, that it's the recording studio that Slippery When Wet was demoed at.
Oh, no way.
In Sayreville, New Jersey. So basically, I had the run of the place, and I could just come downstairs. Yeah, everything was soundproof. I could come downstairs at 3 a.m. and make full band demos if I wanted to, which I had done. But this was just me in our little Studio B mix room, like recording to a cassette tape. But yeah, it was written in the time it took to play it, really.
That is so cool. You had to be a kid in a candy store. In this case,
it was
a kid
awesome.
in a recording studio.
Yeah. If anything, if I just got an idea, I want to do a cover of blah, 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 I just go down and record it. And
was your father, or is your father, a musician?
Yes, he's a drummer. He played drums in a pretty successful cover band in New Jersey for a long time. But also had the studio since like the mid 70s.
That's super cool. So when you wrote the song, you said it was very quick. The song is track 6 out of 16 on the record. So it's not necessarily buried on the album, but it was just kind of like another song. Did you have the lyrics already written, or do you like to sit down and say, you know, I'm just going to let the magic happen, start playing some chords and humming a lyric? Or
yeah, that's how I usually work, is I'll just start strumming a chord, or like sometimes I'll be, I don't know, walking around or doing something and a chorus will pop into my head. But with this one, I think I just started playing it and singing it, and it just kind of popped out. I was feeling it.
Okay, now you said when you showed it to the guys, to Jeff and Joey, that they were a little hesitant at first, or what was the overall consensus?
I don't remember why, but I think Jeff just thought it was a little too poppy, like a little too pop punk. Because like I said, back then we were a lot thrashier. We were kind of doing more like, more like Descendancy, where it was like, you know, there was melody there, but it was definitely more of like a, you know, let's go as fast as we can. And
yeah,
and this I definitely was like my kind of Elvis Costello-y, Beatle-y influences just kind of poking out.
And I swear, all those bands were from Jersey. And you're going to laugh at this, but I just, all the VFW, Moose Lodge, basement shows we did in Jersey in the early days, okay, there would always be some band on the bill. You know, it'd start at 12 noon at some church, go till 10 o'clock at night, and there'd be some band sandwich. It'd be like, you know, ska and pop punk the whole day. And then this band, the Ergs or whoever, would come on at 4 o'clock, and they would like open up with an Exodus cover, and you'd be like, well, what's going on? And then like the whole set, they wouldn't play any of their songs. Like, we're just playing covers today. And you'd be like, what? And I always loved that band. So I always respected
them. We were absolutely that band. Like, you'd be lucky in the early days if we were playing our own songs. We'd do like every Minutemen song, Black Flag, Replacements. We were kind of known as that.
any song you could think back that could clear a room in 5 seconds flat?
We used to open with Don't by Dinosaur Jr., which is the last song on Bug. It's literally just Lou Barlow screaming, "Why don't you like me?" over and over again. I remember we played a quote-unquote emo show. We're like, fuck it, we're just going to do Don't for 25 minutes. And that's what we did. And we did not make any fans at that show.
No, I love that, though, because I'm telling you, I think it's a Jersey thing, too. I can't tell you how many times I saw that exact thing happen.
It could be. I mean, it's in our blood.
Yeah. Well, I want to jump into this tune. And you may have heard me say this, Mikey, because I know you're an avid listener of the show, but there's songs that are four and a half minutes that if they're just constructed so well, it just goes by in a flash. Mm-hmm. This song's interesting. It's only 2 minutes and 21 seconds, but it feels like a 3 minute song, not in a bad way.
That's funny. Yeah. I was going to joke that that this was going to be the shortest episode of Kristen Makes a Podcast.
No, actually not. And it's surprising because there's so much packed into this song, especially, you know, and I don't know if you're more cognizant of this now. You're like an auctioneer here on some of these lines. I don't know how you get all the words in and how you enunciate them so well. It's pretty impressive.
There was probably a bit of Chris Pierce saying, like, can you not garble that that line?
Yeah, Roger calls them throwaway words. I'll do a lot of when I start, you know, these little things like, what are you doing there? Don't do that. You know, like, he's like, I can't even edit it because I can hear the breath going into the next word. Like, stop doing that, you know?
I put W in front of I, so like, why do you, like, if I'm trying to say I, I'll start it with a W. I don't know why, but
I do an H. I do a high.
Hi.
Yeah. And Buddy hates it. He always calls me out for it. He's the one. So one thing off the top of this track that I noticed a difference with the Albini mix is on the original version, it's just straight. The whole band, 8 bars, all in, stereo guitars, bass, and drums. The drums are just hammering away on that crash cymbal. But for Steve's remix, there's a big snare fill that starts it off.
Yeah.
Did he take that snare fill from another part of this song? I think I know where, if he did.
No, it's there. It's there on the, because on the album version, the regular album version, it comes right out of a song called Most Violent Rap Group. And Most Violent Rap Group ends with, you know,
interesting. I couldn't find a version. I looked for, and they're missing the snare.
The snare roll is there, but when we did the remix, I took the opportunity to just like, because over the years, I've definitely heard people complain about how that song is just, is glued into the album. Like, you can't, it was so hard to put it on mix CDs or playlists, yeah, or whatever, because it just is a jarring, like, cut. So I thought it would be cool to just isolate it. Yeah, so we basically just, we just muted the guitars until they come in on the one, and started with the snare roll.
That's interesting, because we get the big snare fill after verse one before we go into pre-chorus one, and I thought maybe Steve had lifted it from there, because I'm assuming he mixed this in Pro Tools. No?
We had to transfer, so that we recorded the album on 16-track 1-inch, and the tape stock was from the early 2000s, so it's, of course, kind of screwed now. So yeah, we had to bake it and transfer it to Pro Tools. So we took it from Pro Tools and then mix it through tape. But he did all of the manipulation, and all the outboard gear and stuff was used through the board. The only thing we really did in Pro Tools was isolate, like, the tom. We took all the, like, extraneous noise off the tom tracks and,
sure,
like, sure, you know, stuff like that, and, like, you know, kind of cleaned up the beginnings and endings so that they were a little cleaner. But we didn't do any, nothing was done in the box in terms of like effects or anything like that.
Okay. Interesting. Well, it's 8 bars. It's just really loud here. It's just, I'm going to use that term again. There's, like, a little bit of reckless abandon that's happening here. And then we get in to verse one, and this song too, you know, I'm calling the chorus something that comes a bit later, but it almost sounds like a chorus right off the top of this song. The whole thing sounds like a chorus to me.
Yeah, I don't think there is a chorus.
Okay.
Like, there's a lot of songs where I just don't write choruses. Choruses in the general sense of the term, where that's the name of the song, and and that's what's repeated three times in the song.
Yeah, the refrain. And Less Than Jake's had a thing for years with that. You know, our song titles never matched what the lyric was typically, and
the Dillinger Four way, you know,
Dillinger Four, you know, yeah, double whiskey, coke, you know, ice, whatever. It's like,
you got
that, you never say that in the song once, you know. Nope. But you know, before we go further, I want to mention something. I don't know if we ever talked about this in the show very briefly. You mentioned baking the tapes earlier, you know, mm-hmm. And for the listeners out there, you know, if you have tapes sitting around for a super long time, you actually have to go through a process of making sure that the stuff is still actually on the tape and it hasn't corroded off the tape.
Yeah. There's a certain bunch of different types of tape stock and from certain eras that just, whatever formulation they were using, it just did not last. Like, mm-hmm. And the part of the tape that the information is actually recorded on starts to fall off of the tape. And if you bake, you put it in a very low degree oven for about 24 hours or something. And that kind of, like, adheres the tape back together, mm-hmm. so that you can play it once. And then it kind of deteriorates again. You can rebake it if you need to, but it's good to just kind of,
yeah,
back it up.
Yeah, I read a crazy article years ago with Tom Scholz from Boston. Mm-hmm. You know, they were in between records, fighting with CBS Records years ago about a delivery of a record. It ended up being like 8 years. And when they went back to work on the album, you know, they had to literally bake all these tapes, and they thought that they were destroyed. So interesting you brought that up. But verse one. With you, so thought I'd try something new and write a silly song about just what your smile could do. But it's just not working out, and now I'm having my doubts. It seems that broken hearted love songs are what I'm all about. By the way, if you have any disagreements of what the verse, pre-chorus, or the chorus is here, we can debate them. Okay?
Yeah, it's funny. I like you said, but there's a lot of words in here, and I was regretting not sending you the lyrics. But we'll see. We'll see how you do.
No, we'll see. We'll see if the old ear is still working here. I'm so in love with you, so I thought I'd try something new and write a silly song about just what your smile could do. But it's just not working out, and now I'm having my doubts. It seems that broken-hearted love songs are what I'm all about.
That's right. So yeah, that was basically, like, I thought it would be fun to, because all of my songs were, you know, breakup songs at that point, and I was trying to figure out a new spin on a breakup song, and so I decided to write a song about wanting to get broken up with, so that I could write the song about about the breakup.
And isn't that so true? That when we're riding high and we got a little money in the bank and there's a loaf of bread on the table, it's like it's hard to be angry and come from the heart and write a song, right?
Yeah, it's like that's all I knew how to do at that point. So I was just like, let me wish for this breakup, and be careful what you wish for, because it did happen.
Well, the band stops on verse one here as the guitar panned off left continues playing. The guitar panned off right is fading out as it on the ring out there, and the hi-hat is here just kind of keeping time. And I love the subtlety of that hi-hat here. It could have been a number of things, but it's very simple.
And that was by necessity. That way we did it live, so I'm keeping the time.
There you go.
I have to.
I was going to ask about that too. It seemed like there's some push pull here. I didn't think this was on a click.
Yeah, we didn't do it to a click. We basically did it all live and then overdubbed the vocal basically. And the guitar on the right is me overdubbing a rhythm guitar.
Okay, well, that was what else I was going to say, and it was interesting because it sounded like it was two kind of different styles, which it is, two different people playing it.
Yeah.
If that was Jeff both times in each speaker, I was wondering if that was, you know, by choice to kind of change it up. It's definitely not a mirror image there.
We purposely used different amps too and different guitar. I think I used the SG, and he used Chris's Dan Armstrong, I think, for for most of the record. So many days, still
unaccounted for it. Well, I've got no more. Hey everybody, stick around. We got lots more Chris to Makes a Podcast coming up with special guest Mikey Erg after a few words from our sponsors.
Looking to elevate your music career? DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that enables musicians to distribute their music to online stores and streaming platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Tidal, and many more. DistroKid collects earnings and payments, sending them to you, the artist. With DistroKid, artists unlock a world of possibilities, from easily paying collaborators with splits to securing your music with DistroLock. DistroKid covers all bases. Plus, you can promote your releases with HyperFollow and create eye-catching visuals with a Spotify Canvas generator, all for free. But that's not all. Introducing the DistroKid app, now available on iOS and Android. Artists can manage their releases, view streaming stats, and withdraw earnings, all from the palm of their hand. And for those looking to perfect their sound, check out Mixia. With its simple interface and customizable mastering options, artists can make their music sound polished and professional within minutes. And don't forget about Instant Share, DistroKid's newest feature. Share large files securely with collaborators, producers, and more, ensuring your music streams at the highest quality. Ready to take your music to the next level? Download the DistroKid app and explore their suite of tools today. Plus, listeners can enjoy 30% off their first year by visiting distrokid.com/VIP/demakes. That's distrokid.com/VIP/demakes.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come, baby, come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast. Come, baby, come, baby, baby, come, come. Come, baby, come, baby, baby, come. How do I know? Uh-oh, Caroline told me so. And now, back to the show.
Well, halfway through here on But It's Just Not Working Out, the bass and the drums, there's like this two hits that happen there, and the guitar panned off right comes in, and that guitar is now doing some moving chords. Mm-hmm. The last line, we get that big snare fill I was talking about earlier. I thought that was the one that maybe Steve lifted and put it at the top, but it's just another cool snare fill. Another thing about the way that you play drums, you know, I'm not a drummer. I wish I was, because I feel like for this song especially, on the demo you sent me, when you get into the guitar solo part, and we'll talk about it, there's this like this weird like three cymbal hiccup that happens in there, that you actually were playing that on the demo with just you and a guitar. It sounded a little odd on the demo, and that part works musically, but it's definitely a little strange. And I always wish, again, that I was a drummer, because you can really, you know, feel those things. What was coming out of your hand on the guitar ended up making it to the drum kit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a drummer first, and I that's the first instrument I learned how to play. And yeah, I really only picked up the guitar because I wanted to write songs. Mm-hmm. And I needed something, some way to accompany myself. And to this day, I basically decided not to learn anything other than how to accompany myself on the guitar. So I can't play any leads. I can't play any, you know, I'm a rudimentary rhythm guitar player. And it's only because I wanted to write songs.
Yeah. But there's something I think special about that too. I've been careful to, you know, I've been kind of a rudimentary guitar player myself within the context of Less Than Jake. And as I've grown and been, you know, whatever, matured as a musician, I've learned other stuff, but you know, you're cautious sometimes to bring that into your sound. It can muck things up.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, unless you're Propaganda and that's what you're going for, which they're like, I think they're kind of like the Rush of punk rock at this point, you know?
Certainly. Yeah.
Which is awesome. Pre-chorus one, the whole band is in here. It's a killer groove. Bass part is super rad here. That crash cymbal, you don't let up on this. No. It's just kind of going through this whole track.
Yeah, that's probably I crash on my ride. That's like,
yeah.
If I'm playing a ride, I'm not going soft on it. I'm crashing.
Yeah, you're not just kind of hitting the bell or anything. You're going for it there. Well, the lyric is, while I'm sore from the smiles that you've given to me, just can't wait for the day when inevitably you say I'm not the guy you thought you knew when we had the talk, and you'll regrettably inform me that you're taking a walk.
It's when we have the talk.
Okay, have was what was on Google. I changed it to had because I swear that's what you're saying there.
Yeah, when we have the talk, like when you tell me that you're breaking up with me, that's what you're going to say.
When we have the talk. Okay. I also, and you guys were never ones to, you know, really have any backing vocals. Was there a conscious decision to keep backing vocals off this track? Because there's certainly room for it.
There's no conscious decision other than like, I didn't have any ideas and no one else had any ideas. So we just didn't do it. This album was done pretty kind of quick and dirty, like, you know, I mean, basic tracks were done in a couple days and overdone. I think we did sporadic sessions throughout like a month or something, but like it was probably done in like 4 or 5 sessions, including mixing maybe.
Yeah.
We just didn't throw anything on there that we didn't have specific ideas about, you know? And even like there's certain things that are just like kind of percussion things, and that was just like, oh, it'd be funny to put this guiro on this one part and mix it really loud, like just stuff like that, just stuff we thought would be funny and catch people off guard, because we were still kind of fucking with people even when we were making our record. But no real reason other than like I just didn't have any ideas, you know.
A lot of this stuff, what you're talking about, gosh, it brought such a smile on my face, Mikey, because I'm thinking back to, you know, our first couple 7 inches of records, like we were throwing samples and weird noises on everything. And I look back now and 9 times out of 10, it's pretty cringy, but this works here. This works. Verse 2. The whole band, stereo guitars, drums, and bass, you're just still slamming away. That crash cymbal is just
right into that second verse. So in love with you, but I just don't know what to do. It seems I lose my inspiration when my heart's on a blue. Now I welcome the pain. Oh yeah, I'm praying for rain to bring some dark black cloudy sadness to this warm sunny day.
This may be my favorite lyrics of the tune. I love what it's saying here. So in love with you, But I just don't know what to do. It seems I lose my inspiration when my heart's not unglued. Now I welcome the pain. Oh yeah, I'm praying for rain to bring some dark, black, cloudy sadness to this warm, sunny day.
More of the same sentiment, you know, just give it to me. Give me that. Give me those rain clouds. Give me that. It's funny. I always kind of cringe at that heart's not unglued lyric because I just don't. I don't know whether it's awkward or not, but it sounded cool to me, so I just
it's definitely awkward. It's awkward as hell, but it's great. There again, there's a vulnerability. I haven't used that word to this song yet. You sound like you're almost unhinged singing this. Like you're almost on the brink of crying.
Yeah, Kelly Clarkson was on Howard Stern the other day, and she was talking about how they were talking. I guess someone she co-wrote a song with. This woman, Gail, I think is her stage name. And she's like a 19-year-old kid. And she just, Kelly was talking about how like there's just that urgency and that the thing that comes with youth and, you know, everything is the end of the world. And that's exactly how I was sort of referring to like my current songwriting versus my songwriting in the Ergs was, I mean, it was the end of the, I was 21 years old when I wrote that, this song, like it was the end of the fucking world. Like everything was over.
Yeah.
You know, like, so I miss having like the, but you know, when you grow up, you realize it's not the end of the world. There's, you know, life goes on, but I kind of miss the, you know, the putting that urgency in the songs, like
the urgency.
Yeah, urgency.
Yeah. No, it's crazy because the fact that you said that, I just fully got the chills because all I've ever known from you, especially when you guys pull up in the van and like crack a beer and like the party was on. You were just you were this fresh-faced kid. You were just happy and you were always talking about nuances of music and you know, you're kind of like Stefan from Descendants in that aspect. It's always about songs and music and this guy, and to hear you say no, it was like in my head it was the end of the world. I was just I was confused about love and confused about life.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it's funny to like, yeah, just think about how that's like the difference between the Ergs and like anything I do, anything I've done after that is just like, it's just a different type of songwriting. I feel like you don't do that type of song, for better or worse, you don't do that type of songwriting once you pass a certain age.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we talked about this a second ago. I'm kind of chuckling at my notes here on this, on verse two. I wrote, word jumble at its finest, but you can feel and hear the desperation in the delivery of the vocal. Great enunciation, by the way.
Excellent, yes. Yeah, I'm sure there was a bit of Chris saying, like, do it again, enunciate more. I can't understand what you're saying.
I was going to ask about Chris's role. I mean, it sounds like he came in and just captured the band, but it sounds like when you went to do the vocals that he would say little things. How did that help you?
I mean, yeah, one of the reasons we liked working with him was because he was a, you know, kind of hands off. He wasn't telling us to do the to put a bridge in or, you know, do the chorus a third time or anything like that. He was just there to capture everything, but he was. You know, yeah, when I was doing the vocals, he'd do things here and there, like, oh, maybe try that a little higher, or, like, he would always say, like, smile, because, like, when you smile, you're a little less pitchy, I guess, or something. Like, he would always have, like, those, he was very helpful when I was doing the vocals, definitely, because he would give me pointers and things like that, and we doubled a few things, because he was very into doubling, and he convinced me by saying that John Lennon used to double. And I never knew. I was just like, I never knew what made those Beatles records sound like that, but it was the doubling of the vocals. I still don't really love my vocals doubled, but the choruses are doubled in this song. And actually on the Steve Albini version, those are brought out a bit more, which I think is kind of cool, actually.
I could hear it. I thought it was really cool. Well, pre-chorus comes right on the heels of verse two here. There's a slight lyric change here. There's no "while I'm sore." It just starts off with "sore from the smiles that you've given to me." Just can't wait for the day when inevitably you say I'm not the guy you thought you knew when we have the talk.
That's right.
And you regrettably informed me that you're taking a walk. And I think Mikey, that grammatically confused me and why I thought it was have. It's you say I'm not the guy you thought you knew when we had.
Yeah.
Versus you knew when we have the talk. Have hasn't happened yet. It's a little confusing, but yeah, I love the wordplay.
Yeah, it's kind of like in my 22-year-old mind or whatever, like she's actually saying, you're not the guy I thought I knew, but we're having the talk at that moment when she's saying that, I think is what I'm, I think that's what I'm going for there.
Gotcha. And how did this happen, if you recall? Did producer Chris Pierce say, hey, you can't get in all this on this pre-chorus. You can't get in the while I'm sore. You're just going for sore. Do you remember?
It was probably just me knowing that I couldn't fit that while. I don't know. It's probably me just not being able to fit it in and just
to where you left off on warm sunny day in verse two, it would probably have had to have been an overdub. And again, you're thinking in a live setting, and that's why this feels live, and it was cut live because you know, at least at this point in your career, you're still thinking from a live sense. We did too. My first records were always like, well, how's this going to translate live? And the first producer I ever said to me, well, that doesn't matter. We're making a record. It's different. I was like, what are you talking about? Like, all
you
I know
still
is
gotta play it.
Yeah, all I know is live, you know.
Yeah.
But besides that slight lyric change, it was the same there. And then at all of 58 seconds, and I can't believe how much information has hit me as a listener up to this point. Again, it doesn't feel like it's only been a minute. It feels like a full, big, complete song.
It's actually funny when you told me how long the song was, because I thought it was way shorter than that.
Oh, you did? Okay.
I was like, this song's only like a minute and a half long.
But 58 seconds, we're in what I'm calling this part the chorus.
Yeah, it's the only part that repeats.
And I could write you the perfect song, and you could sing along. Yeah, you could sing along. Yeah, I could write you the perfect song, and you could sing along. Yeah, you could sing along.
And I think you mentioned a second ago that there was some vocal doubling on this song. I had written down, was this double? This is where I hear it.
It's only when I compared the old mix and the Albini mix that I realized that, oh yeah, it is. The double is way more prominent in the remix. I'm sure I made Chris turn it down on the original mix because I was anti-doubling at that point.
Something that I haven't talked about too much on the show that I want to bring up right now, it's where the downbeat is on this lyric. So I'm going to read the lyrics real quick. And I could write you the perfect song and you could sing along. Yeah, you could sing along. Yeah, I could write you the perfect song and you could sing along. Yeah, you could sing along. The downbeat here is I. The and is still kind of attached to the pre-chorus. Mm-hmm. And I never thought about that. You know, when the chorus comes in on the one beat, on that downbeat, your lyric, a lot of times in songs, a lyric can start before the chorus lyric. It can start on the beat, or the beat can come in and the lyric could start after.
Right.
It all depends how you want it to hit the listener. I love where it hits here.
I certainly, I don't think I was thinking about that, but it's just what happened when I played it.
Right, because it could have been, jing, I could write, but it's not. It's I, right on the downbeat. And those are things that as a younger songwriter, they never entered my mind. When I had a producer bring that to me one time, he's like, well, yeah, the chorus could start somewhere else. I'm like, what do you mean? The chorus starts right here. He's like, yeah, but look where your vocal is. Huh? He's like, yeah, back your vocal up a little bit. Now that's what I wanted to hit harder, and I never thought about that.
Well, that's funny. I mean, because I'm sure it was the opposite for me. It was just me not knowing what I was doing and starting there, you know?
Which is great too. And isn't there something beautiful about not knowing things like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of the best songs are written by people who don't know what they're doing.
Like, I know. And sometimes I overthink stuff. And sometimes I have to hand off things to my bandmates or a producer and say, I don't know what's best for this part. I don't.
Yeah.
I was hearing it this way, and now you guys are telling me something different. Now my head's going, you know, and
right.
that's, you know, that's good and bad. I've learned to harness that, but it can definitely get you a little bit scatterbrained in the studio. The band goes halftime on the last line here for a second before this drum fill takes us into the guitar solo. You know, I hear a little Stephen Egerton in this solo. I hear a little Weezer. I hear, again, I'm going to use the term garage rock. Just kind of the solo's cool. Was that something that you guys have been playing in the jam room, or did that just happen when you recorded it?
I don't know that Jeff plays the same solo ever twice. You know, I think even when we do it live every time, it's slightly different. Like, unless it's like a riff that we've home, you know, Joe and Jeff used to just kind of like, you know, in if there's a verse, like a break in the vocal, they'd put a riff there, like do 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 do, you know, something like that, and that stuff kind of stays the same. But I feel like I've noticed that Jeff like doesn't really, I mean, he sticks to the feel of it, but I don't know that like the exact, I think it was probably just an improvised solo that just worked at the time.
Gosh, I wish I could do that. Even with my vocals, like I just find like I try to stick to certain things, and I don't go too much outside of that box. And there's other guys that just can't understand that train of thought at all. Right. They're more like they're more like Jeff going, no, I'm just gonna play with feeling from the heart, and you know.
Yeah, I feel like that's what he does. And there, but you know, there's definitely some Stefan in there. There's definitely some Greg Ginn influence. But yeah, I'm sure he probably just played that solo once and then never played it again.
Right around bar three in this solo, bar three of eight, just before it, we get that 1, 2, 3, that weird cymbal thing that you do that was on the initial demo. I say weird. It's not weird musically. It's just, it's a little jarring coming in there. And again, I just think that's so cool that I heard your percussiveness of your right hand playing that part on the demo, and it got translated because, as you said, first and foremost, you're a drummer.
Yeah, I can't remember if I dictated that to them or if it was just in the demo and I just did it and they followed along with me or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember saying, like, this has to be right here at this time, but it was obviously in my head the entire time.
Well, we get out of this solo, we come right into pre-chorus three. And, you know, this part, again, all three parts, the verse, the pre-chorus, and the chorus, they're all just so catchy in their own right. And it's interesting, what I'm calling the chorus in this song only happens twice, but the pre-chorus happens three times.
Right. So while I'm soaring from the smiles that you're giving to me, just can't wait for the day when inevitably say I'm not the guy you thought you knew when we had the talk, and you'll regret only informing that you're taking a walk in.
We only get a slight lyrical change on pre-chorus three. It's "so while I'm sore." You get a "so" in there. So you're adding more words at the end of the song.
So I had more room. I wasn't singing before it.
So again, and I'm assuming that that was just kind of off the cuff. We weren't copying, pasting the second pre-chorus into here in Pro Tools. Everything was the tape.
I'm sure I probably did one take of vocals and then fixed whatever pitchiness or whatever. I'm not sure exactly how I did it, but I know he would just let me go, and it was to tape, and you would punch like anything that was wrong.
Yeah, just come back in and fix a word or fix a line. So pre-chorus three, the ride cymbal is now keeping time. I like that. You get away from that hi-hat at the top. It's a breakdown here. Am I hearing bass harmonics in here with sporadic bass notes? Given to me, just can't wait for the day
when inevitably say I'm not the guy. I think, man, you know, I haven't paid attention to it in a while.
I think there's some harmonics. And then the other thing I noticed, Mikey, was, and I don't know what the proper term for this is, I'm calling them neck string plucks. So it's like down by the tuning pegs, okay?
Oh, the yeah.
You know, when you take a pickup there, is that what's happening? Kind of panned off left. I'm hearing that here. That is not in the Steve Albini mix.
Huh? It could be. I'm not sure. I'll have to listen to it. Jeff wasn't one to do that, really, so I don't know.
Okay.
It could just be some weird, I don't know, noise that was...
Okay.
But yeah, it's weird that it's not on, if it's not on the Albini mix, I wonder, I'll have to listen to it.
Where it's mixed on the original recording, it's definitely there, and it's like, what is this? Hmm. You know, it's like, it almost sounds like if it was mixed louder, it wouldn't be long, and I'm wondering if that's what Albini heard, and he's maybe. Like, this doesn't really need to be here. Today would inevitably say I'm not the guy you thought
you knew, and we had the talk, and you're regrettably. That is one of the cool things that he would do is like if he heard something that he thought would be better enhanced, like he would turn that up for like he'd ride the fader for a second for like there were a couple like little flourishes that I did in the right that you know he would kind of bring up and bring down. So yeah, maybe he decided to mix that out.
So if any listeners out there know what a headstock string pluck. You know, it's like a horror movie sound. Is there a name for that, Mikey?
I don't know. It's a little plinky.
Yeah, I need to record it now. I got my guitar here. I needed to show it. It's this sound for the listeners. It's...
Yeah. Listen to the beginning of Tourette's by Nirvana.
There you go. Oh, yes. Or any Michael Myers Halloween movie at the start right. of it. Well, we come out of pre-chorus 3, and we're into chorus 2. You the perfect song, and you could sing along. Yeah, you could sing along. When I write you the perfect song about how everything's gone wrong, and you could sing along. And I could write you the perfect song, and you could sing along. Yeah, you could sing along. And then the little break here between the first and second half, the bass run here is just incredible. It's so good. How much were you involved with Joey when he was tracking? Like, did you get in there and get involved?
No.
No.
No, never. Like, he would just do what he did. We left him to his own devices.
He doesn't get mentioned. I think it's unfair. He doesn't get mentioned a lot in the circles of what a great bass player and the parts he came up with.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, he's definitely the best bass player I've ever played with. And it's funny I've known him since, you know, early high school. And that's when he started playing. I knew him when he didn't know how to play bass. And all of a sudden he just worked so hard at it. And within a few weeks, he was just incredible. And it was... How'd you learn that quickly? But yeah, he's great. And yeah, he'd come up with all of his own shit. And like I said, sometimes him and Jeff, if either of them came up with like a cool little riff in between some words or something, they would kind of hash that out and do a little cool, like kind of, you know, almost like Thin Lizzy-y, like co-lead with each other. But yeah, he'd come up with everything. I came up with the lyrics and the melody and the chords, and then they just ran with it. That's basically how our songwriting process was.
Another thing in Steve's mix I noticed is the bass. It's just it was EQ'd properly because the tone and the parts are there, the playing's there, but it sounds so good. The back half of the chorus here is, and I could write you the perfect song, and how everything's gone wrong. And you could sing along. The second half here, a lead guitar part comes in, kind of centered right up the middle. It's awesome that when that comes in there. It needed something there.
Yeah, and I think that was just Jeff like, it needs something here. I'm going to overdub something, you know? Like,
yeah, it's really good. And on the last line, the whole band slows down. And the way that you say along and you hold that out, it kind of says it all for me with this track. I feel disillusionment. I feel apathy. I feel some sadness. I kind of feel a case of the efforts, you know, come on.
Yeah.
Is that fair to say that was kind of how it was delivered?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that. And then something that's not on the Albini mix, that's on the original, unless this was supposed to be for the next song, I don't know, but there's a spoken word.
I just called the girl that I go out with long distance. She told me she doesn't want to go out with me anymore, and then she hung up. Fucking hung up on me long distance. I guess then when I get back home, I'll be alone again.
I have a question about the spoken word. That's you pitch shifted, right?
No, it's Henry Rollins.
What?
It's from the statute of limitations is probably over. We probably won't get sued, but it's a sample from Henry Rollins' Get in the Van audiobook.
Oh, okay. And I read Get in the Van. I never heard the audiobook, but I somehow missed this. And it's, I just called the girl. So this is on the fade out of the song. You can still kind of hear the instruments kind of breaking up. And it says, I just called the girl that I go out with long distance. She told me she doesn't want to go out with me anymore. And then she hung up. Fucking hung up on me. Long distance, I guess. Then when I get back home, I'll be alone again. What was the deal with that? Just wanted something fun on the end?
Yeah, we just, we used to listen to, it's like you said, with we'd put samples all over everything, we'd do whatever. I mean, we listened to Get in the Van, every van ride, I think, you know, like it was just, we were just obsessed with it. And yeah, I don't know, I just thought it would be funny to put that at the end of
The delivery of Henry there and the way that you speak and you pause, I swear it was you pitch shifting. I'm like, that's Mikey.
That's so funny. No, yeah, it's a Henry Rollins sample. And fun fact, it is not going to be on the remix.
Okay.
And only because we wanted to do something different with it. We actually wrote Henry to see if he would actually do it for us, and he politely declined.
Ah.
We asked Steve to do it, and he politely declined. So we figured we'll just leave it as is. I kind of like in the remix, you kind of hear us kind of like, like falling apart. And I kind of liked the way that sounded.
And I got to ask something I haven't asked. What was the reason? Are you doing a reissue? What was the reason to remix this song in particular? And did you do any other songs with Steve that he remixed?
We did the whole record.
Oh,
the whole,
wow.
It'll come out as a 20th anniversary reissue next year.
Oh, that's awesome.
And the original's not going away. We're not going to take the original off of streaming or anything like that, but like I said, we basically just wanted to bring the album into kind of a, you know, at least high resolution audio, and you know, kind of make it not, you know, a little higher than CD quality now that we can, and now that there are streaming services that offer that and stuff like that. So
well, for everybody listening, A, be it with the Steve Albini mix. Steve knocked it out of the park. It sounds so good. It reminds me of when All went back and remixed their early stuff.
Right, and that's kind of where I was coming from, and that we didn't really want to change it, but we just wanted to make it a little more pleasing to the ear, I guess. I mean, I love that All record that has all the, that kind of took the 80s off of those early records, you know, just made it just a little more pleasing to my ear, you know?
Yeah, a little more in your face. Well, hey, before we break here, what's coming up with you, the band? What do you want to plug? What do you got?
Well, the Ergs are, we're going to be playing some sporadic shows. We have nothing booked at the moment, but we...
You guys playing Fest this year in Gainesville?
We're not playing Fest. I'm playing solo, but we're not going to play. We played last year, so we're going to give it a rest this year. But we are, we're planning on, so basically next year is we're going to gear up for, like, we're reissuing the record in hopefully June for the 20th anniversary. And then we'll probably do, like, you know, Weekend Warrior stuff, and hopefully doing some overseas stuff and, you know, stuff too. And yeah, I got some solo stuff coming up, like just regular shows here and there. I have 4 solo albums that people can check out if they're so inclined. And yeah, I don't know. Same old shit. Just look out for some Ergs goodness next year.
Heck yeah, man. Well, hey, thanks so much for not just being on the show today, but for listening and all the kind words recently when we hung out, man. It means a lot.
Thank you. What does it mean when you can't let this go? What does it mean when you know? Caution me at the bar. Can I say, secrets your secrets are, they got nothing on the sunshine.
I hope you all enjoyed that really fun episode with Mikey Erg. But don't go anywhere. We got lots more Chris DeMakes a Podcast, including The Band You Might Not Know and the rap segment, coming up right after a few words from our sponsors.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
As we near the end of the show, here's a band you might not know.
Welcome to this week's Band You Might Not Know. If you'd like your band to be considered for Krista Makes a Podcast, all you have to do is email your best song, via MP3 only, and a short bio to bandyoumightnotknow@gmail.com. This week's featured artist is Alex Casnell and the Board of Directors from Cincinnati, Ohio, with Alex on guitar and vocals, Heather Sampanis on bass and vocals, and Brian Tall on drums. Their sound has been described as surprisingly unwhiny, a style they affectionately call pop punk for grown-ups. You can find their music on all the streaming platforms. Here's a snippet of their song, Victoria.
I'm so sorry, Victoria. I gotta have you as more than just a friend. I could tell that you knew what I was thinking. Open my mouth like a dam was breaking. I'm running up the phone bill. I can't stop thinking about you long enough to sleep. Nights with you are like a best of Motown CD. Tori, you really got a hold on me.
The Rap with Chris and Chris.
So, Chris, it was another story from a lifer about a song that just sort of fell out of him when he was young that went on to become a fan favorite. We've heard it time and time again, and it just seems to be the proven method for writing a great song, man. Just let it flow.
Absolutely. You know, Mikey even said it. He was a lot younger, flying by the seat of his pants, just writing stuff, and you just don't think about those things. You don't, you know, like, this is going to be my breakout song. I mean, maybe some people do, but he definitely wasn't thinking that way. It was just another tune, and here we are 20 years later, and people have gravitated to it hardcore.
He talked about that desperation. You can't fake that when you're writing a good song, especially if you're in a spot in your life where you're not necessarily happy. And how many of us, I'm not saying that any of us are ever completely happy, but maybe there's times in your life you're a little happier than other times. It's hard to write a really great song that resonates with people. Hey, that's just the way it is. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I'm saying it's a little easier to write a song that people can relate to when you are actually feeling sad or angry or desperate. And that comes through not only in the song itself, but the delivery of a vocal performance. People can hear that. People can feel that. This song is an example of that.
Yeah, there's been countless, and we've talked about this, Chris, countless songs that have been demoed and recorded by bands that it isn't until Tina Turner or whoever sang the song that it became a massive hit because of that connection, the way that they sang it. That energy that comes out of a person's mouth or through their hands and it lands onto to digital tape or whatever, there is something about that that is undeniable. There is something there that it takes a special a person to create that.
It's also really important, and you talked about that in this case. I mean, it could be a producer, it could be a bandmate, it could be a friend in the room, just that other set of ears in the room giving you some suggestions and some guidance when you're tracking your vocals. Chris, when we're recording this, it was last week that I was put through the ringer in a vocal tracking session. It was in a new Punchline song that I sing lead on. It was a 7 or 8 hours for one song where it was intense. And I think I got, because of my friends pushing me to the limit, I think I might have gotten my best vocal performance ever. I hope so anyway. But man, oh man, how important that is to have that other set of ears in the room. I know that's probably important to you as well, I think,
yes,
right? To have Roger or somebody, right?
Well, for sure. It sounds like you got the jockey straps across the back for 8 hours the other day.
I sure did.
Yeah. And I've been there in the hot seat. Yeah, for me, it's always, my voice is the one thing that I always let somebody else edit my vocals. I'll have Roger edit them. I hear all the nuances. I just can't do it, you know? But I'd like to think, and I've talked about this before, I'd like to think that having that kind of critical producer in there with me over the years has just made me a better singer. So hopefully you came out better.
I think maybe that would be the case, Chris. I know you've had this experience. I had it the other day where you're working with somebody who the person you're working with is a great singer themselves. So they're telling you how to sing this thing. And you're like, oh my God, I wish I could emulate what you're doing right now. Like, I want you to breathe in on this line and I want you to swoop up and then I want you to come down on, and you step up to the mic and it's time to deliver the line. And it's just like someone's pitching a baseball at you and you just step up and like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
Is it going to happen? And sometimes magically it does, but it is hard, man. It takes a lot of takes.
Sure. And it sounds like, you know, Chris Pierce, this producer, really was just a recording engineer. Mikey said he wasn't in there trying to, you know, hey, you should put a bridge part here, but he was that extra set of ears. He was the extra person to bounce an idea off of. And sometimes that's really crucial in the studio.
Hey, I also love the story you told early in the episode about how, you know, you got to talking to Mikey about this. How about how they would just go out and do what they want with no regard to what the audience might think.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's like something I've always dreamt about doing, because you know what band I always heard about doing that, especially earlier in their career, was Ween. Ween would go out in front of the most hostile crowd and just do the most ridiculous thing and piss off the crowd. And I always thought that's so funny, and it takes so much guts to go out and do that. And I think that's so cool. I've never had the guts myself, at least collectively with a band, to just go out and like, hey, let's just go out and do this thing we want to do. Who cares what people think? I think that is awesome when bands do that.
Yeah, I've never been able to take it to the nth degree like that either, but I saw a number of bands, One Eye Open from California years ago. They'd open with a Striper cover and clear the room, you know, and they didn't care, you know?
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. I really enjoyed this episode. Sometimes when I listen to our episodes with an artist who is truly punk rock in their approach, you know, it makes me realize or makes me think sometimes, maybe I'm not that punk rock. Maybe I'm a pop artist. You know, like, I want everything to be so pristine, and it doesn't need to be too resonate with people, you know, and to be a great punk rock band. And I think that's what Mikey is, and I think that's what the Ergs are.
Yeah, and they have their own sound because of it. If you were to take this band and line it up on a grid and a click, tune all the vocals, make sure all the guitars are perfectly in tune, all the drum hits line up, then it's going to sound like some stale pop punk band, run of the mill, you know? And it doesn't sound like that at all here.
It really is. It'd be very easy to take a band like the Ergs. Yeah, like you said, put them on the grid, make everything pristine, and all of a sudden you're going to lose a big chunk of what makes this band special.
Yeah, you're gonna lose that personality, and I'll say it again. Sometimes that personality that comes across and lands on tape, it can't be replaced.
Speaking of tape, Chris, real quick, I never heard in my life, I don't know, I must be living under a rock, about people baking baking the tape.
Mm-hmm.
I can't imagine doing that. That's crazy. I've never heard of that.
Yeah, there's like a tape oxidization that happens, and the information that's on the tape, we could Google this and look up the exact thing, but basically you have to rebake it into the tape. It loses that over time. Yeah. And he's the first person to bring it up here. And I wanted to tell the audience, I didn't want them to think that, you know, like, baked, what, you know, was he making dinner in the middle of the take? Like, I wanted them to know that this was actually a real thing.
Yeah. You learn something new every episode. I do anyway.
Absolutely.
Learn something new every episode of Chris to Makes a Podcast. You know where else you learn something new, Chris?
I think I do, Chris. Would that be on the after party?
It sure would be. The after party. It is our bonus episode each week. If you go sign up for the supporting cast at ChrisToMakes.com, you can be part of, you know, a bonus episode every week where we try to bring you a lot of knowledge. We have a lot of really good episodes coming up, Chris, even ones that we're going to record tomorrow morning, which you're going to learn a lot of things in these ones we have coming up, Chris, as are our listeners.
Well, I can't wait. Again, go to ChrisDemakes.com. You can sign up for the supporting cast, and you'll be helping Chris and I out. If you haven't already, please give me a follow on Instagram at @LessThanChrisD, and I'm still doing those custom songs. Get at me, ChrisDemakes@gmail.com. I'd love to write you or that special someone a song or even a jingle for your business. Hit me up, ChrisDemakes@gmail.com. And I want to thank this week's guest, Mikey Erg, for sitting in the hot seat, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you. Hey, Chris Makes a Podcast producer, Chris Fafalius here. You may have heard me talk about my band Punchline before. Maybe you already know us, or maybe you're hearing about us for the first time right now. It doesn't matter. No matter what your relationship with Punchline is, I will absolutely guarantee that you'll love our new podcast, A Band Called Punchline. Starting with our humble beginnings in a small town in southwestern Pennsylvania in 1997, we're telling the hilarious, strange, and hopefully inspiring story of the 25 plus years of our band in the most honest way possible, podcast style. A Band Called Punchline is an audio documentary available now wherever you get your pods. So subscribe and let me and my friends share a wild, entertaining, unique, and wonderful tale of music and perseverance unlike any other that's still being written today.
Hey there, I am Johnny Christ from Avenged Sevenfold, and I've got a podcast called Drinks with Johnny you're going to want to check out. I sit down with a bunch of different people from all different walks of life, from professional wrestlers to actors, comedians, fighters, musicians, everything in between. I'm just looking to make some friends and have a good time doing it. So if that sounds like something you're into, go check out Drinks with Johnny, streaming everywhere now.
What's up, everybody? I am Finn McKenty, host of the Punk Rock NBA podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. My podcast is all about doing what you love for a living, and every week I sit down and talk to people who have done exactly that. For example, musicians like Tommy from Between the Buried Me, Matt from Periphery, Lil Lotus and Shinigami, among many others. Photographers, artists, designers, YouTubers like Glenn Fricker and Sarah Dici, and I unpack exactly how they got to where they are today with the goal of helping you do the same. So if that sounds cool, you can listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com, and I'll see you there.